Good morning. We have only one case this morning. It's United States v. Rodriguez. Is the appellant prepared to argue? Government? Okay. Appellant may argue.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Lieutenant Commander Benjamin Robinson, and I represent Petty Officer Michael Rodriguez, the appellant in this case. Chief Judge Stuckey, may I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes.
In United States v. Orban, this court applied a straightforward criterion for the required evidence of specific intent under indecent liberties. This criterion should have applied in this case for three reasons. First, due process requires coexisting mens rea with the prohibited act as a prerequisite for criminal liability. Second, the offense charged here was the same type of offense as that charged in Orban. And third, the approach is consistent with the purpose of the statute. The analysis in Orban required evidence that the accused had the alleged specific intent at the time he committed the alleged act. It does not require that the evidence was from that moment in time, nor does it prohibit evidence that's circumstantial in nature from proving that specific intent. The facts in these cases fail to satisfy Orban on two fronts.
Counsel, is this a case about Orban, or is this a case about legal sufficiency?
Your Honor, Orban is about legal sufficiency.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, go ahead.
And Orban closely parallels this in ways I'll explain. The alleged kissing here was accompanied by manifestations, which is the analysis that Orban applied, manifestations of intent that was innocent and demonstrated a lawful purpose, consistent with typical behavior inside the home.
Is a manifestation of innocence necessary, or simply not a manifestation of gratifying one's lust?
Your Honor, it is significant that there was evidence of another intent here. If there was no manifestation of intent, then these facts would look differently under legal sufficiency review. But here, the government tried to project on evidence of intent from text messages to the acts, where those text messages didn't accompany the acts in any way. And
are you saying they have to be contemporaneous?
Not contemporaneous in any narrow sense that has a bright line rule, but...
Well, do you think contemporaneous has a broad meaning?
No, Your Honor. But can...
What does what you said just said mean?
What it means is that the government, in this case, needs to show at least when the kissing happened with relation to the text messages. And the government wasn't even able to establish here whether the kissing occurred before or after, and whether it happened as far back as 4.5 months before or as far ahead as 2.5 weeks after. In fact, they charged an even larger diverse occasions time frame.
Well, counsel, how would you deal with our holding in Carnes, where we said that as long as the conduct occurred within a reasonable time, how are you interpreting within a reasonable time?
Your Honor, the reasonable time frame, I think, has to be understood with reference to the type of specific intent. The type of specific intent in Carnes was to transport a minor interstate commerce for purposes of committing another sexual offense. That's an intent that requires much more formation. Where here we're talking about the intent to arouse and gratify, I don't think it's reasonable to assume that the intent to arouse or gratify at one point in time can be translated back and forward so far. And going back to the point earlier, It also is important to consider the description of the events by the eyewitnesses, which included her mother and the person she text messaged, Petty Officer Rodriguez text messaged with, and that person, in fact, didn't see the two as related.
Well, why isn't that a good argument for a panel? But when it comes to our court, we're looking at this in the light most favorable to the government. And here, even though the witnesses were saying that it seemed to be done in a playful manner, we have text messages from appellant who was clearly putting it the conduct in a sexual context, talking about posing of the feet of the child victim, talking about the appellant wanting the paramour to suck on the feet of the child, all in a sexual context. So why are we not supposed to just look at that and say, viewing this in light most favorable to the government, we're in a different posture than the position you're taking?
Your Honor, the light most favorable to the government still requires that all of the evidence be considered. And considering all of that evidence requires this court to consider Eleanor's description that he and VG were both very playful towards each other, and with Crystal, the mother, being around, he would play around and kiss her on the feet and be like tossing her on the couch and give her raspberries toward her feet. That was the description. And so even when we view that in the light most favorable to the government, it doesn't manifest the intent. So
yes, if you're looking strictly at that small snippet of information, that may be true, but that's not the entirety of the circumstances. I've just spelled out that there is other evidence out there that is highly incriminating in terms of the fact that appellant engaged in this conduct with the intent to satisfy his sexual desires. And we can't ignore that, counsel, and just focus on the bits of evidence you would have us look at.
Well, Your Honor, that evidence came in under a broad set of charges, not all of which led to convictions. In fact, the text messages themselves were charged as indecent language, and the military judge acquitted Petty Officer Rodriguez on those. And similarly, the text messages referenced putting a foot in the mouth, and that led to a specification for sucking the feet of, which was also something that the military judge acquitted the accused of. And so I think there's a real question as to whether the military judge saw those text messages as factual in nature, whether they described either a future intent or past events, and I think taken even in the light most favorable to the government, they don't describe the acts alleged here. So while they may have formed the basis for an indecent language charge, and that maybe formed the basis for a charge for acts that closely fit the conduct described in the message, those specifications led to an acquittal. And so it's a tenuous proposition to take that discussion and translate it to the alleged kissing, which was described as objectively innocent.
Counsel, now in the usual case, you have a panel of members. Here you have a judge alone trial. And the judge in this case made special findings. So have you taken issue with any of those particular findings? Are they all erroneous? Are some of them erroneous? What's your view on that?
Your Honor, it was erroneous.
It mean all of them?
Sorry, the special findings specifically on the specific intent were erroneous, specifically because he uses the phrase placed in the context of the text messages. And that was an abuse of discretion because the facts in the record never put the kissing, which I just provided the testimony on, never put that in the context of those text messages. They were two things that just happened to coexist factually. And in fact, that's something that's been recognized for decades, particularly in indecent liberties cases, that courts should look to the nature of the report in the case as evidence of the indecent character. In other words, the subjective understanding of someone who reports it as an incident of indecent liberties. And here, no one, the mother who was present, Eleanor, who was also there, and the child, none of those people understood it as a crime that needed to be reported. And similarly, CPS, the CPS interviewer was called at trial, and she also didn't intervene in this based on her understanding of the facts. And so I think there's a genuine question as to the facts as they were established in the record show that this was an innocent encounter that just so happened to coincide with this exchange of text messages. It's also important to understand that the text messages were part of a relationship between this woman and the accused, in which even expert testimony established the text message showed that he was interested in arousing her, not in arousing himself through VG. And so based on those, both a plain reading of the messages and the expert testimony, it's tenuous to translate that intent forward to these instances that were charged. And in fact, individual instances were never described in the record, which is something noted by the CCA as difficult to reconcile in terms of reviewing the legal sufficiency.
Counsel, may I ask you a question? If you were asked if it was possible to reduce your position to a legal rule in the form of circumstantial evidence of intent is legally insufficient when blank, what would you say? In other words, we have a standard for when evidence is legally insufficient. But in this case, I think you're asking for something special, which is circumstantial evidence of intent is legally insufficient when, what would you say the rule is?
When there's evidence that the conduct is potentially innocent and there's no external manifestation of the prohibited intent. And I think that's at the core of this problem, is that it's potentially innocent conduct. And that's why this really...
What do you mean there's no external manifestation of the prohibited intent?
As it was described here, everyone present understood this as typical playful behavior that occurs between parental figures and children in a home. So when you have that objective description of the behavior, if there's no manifestation of the prohibited intent,
and how would it have been manifested here? Isn't it true that sexual desire oftentimes is concealed?
Yes, Your Honor, and the circumstantial evidence instruction references that, but there are many, many cases that address that. The conduct immediately before and after can indicate intent. The language that people speak before, during, and after can indicate, manifest externally that intent. In our criminal justice system, we don't punish intent alone. That's a foundational aspect of our system. And so here, where you have a prohibited act that reaches any contact, direct physical contact or contact caused through another externality of any body part, the prohibited act itself would be vague and overbroad if it wasn't for this specific intent. And so to meaningfully require proof of culpability, there has to be external manifestation of some sort.
And why wasn't that addressed in the text messages that were sent to the paramour? So it's in the context of sexual interest, foot fetish. He's talking about putting the foot of the child in his mouth. He's talking about posing the, or did pose the photos of the children, or pose the feet of the child for the photos. Why isn't this the manifestation that you're saying has to be there? This is not done in a vacuum where a father or a stepfather is simply kissing innocently a young child's foot. There is, as you've conceded, it's appropriate to look at the entirety of the circumstances.
Yes, Your Honor. And had he been convicted of putting the VG's foot in his mouth, I think it would be safe to say that in the context of those text messages, you could infer that intent. But I think clearly what the findings, the military judge's special findings showed, is that the messages weren't factual. And the expert testimony demonstrated that the messages were aimed at arousing Eleanor, his paramour, not at discussing his arousal. And in fact, the messages themselves don't indicate that he was aroused. And in fact, I think it's clear that there was nothing factual about them. And so based on that, certainly there might be theories of liability under which, as the government charged it, the messages could be charged as indecent liberties, indecent language. But the military judge didn't find that. And so transferring that sort of aura of intent without dates and without a similarity in the nature of the behavior doesn't satisfy the legal sufficiency standard, which, while it looks to the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, still requires a finding beyond a reasonable doubt. And it still requires that all of the evidence be looked at in the light most favorable to the government. And there's evidence here that's simply inconsistent with understanding these alleged nondescript instances of kissing as a crime. I see that my time is up.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court. Good morning, Chief Judge Tukey, honorable members of the court. My name is Lieutenant Commander Emily Rose, and I, along with Mr. Stephen McCleary, represent the United States. This court should affirm the lower court's findings for the following reasons. First, the requisite intent under Article 120 BC can be proven via non-contemporaneous circumstantial evidence. Second, the evidence in this case was legally sufficient to show that the appellant had the specific intent to arouse or gratify his sexual desires when he kissed an 8-year-old child's feet on multiple occasions. As to the first point, that non-contemporaneous circumstantial evidence may be used to prove the required intent, the government would like to first make a distinction. The government fully acknowledges that the requisite intent must coincide with the criminal act. But the government disagrees with the appellant's contention that the evidence used to prove intent must have been manifested at the time of the criminal act.
Say that again. That's an extremely, maybe just to me, but it's an extremely confusing statement.
Yes, Your Honor. So while the requisite intent itself must coexist with the act itself, the evidence that's used...
Oh, the manifestation of the requisite intent can be out there in the ether somewhere.
Yes, Your Honor. It can be some distance in time from when the actual...
How far?
The government acknowledges that in different cases there may be different distances of time that could be reasonable. In this case in particular, the acts occurred within a 5-month time frame from December 2014 to April 2015, and the text messages that reveal the appellant's intent occurred within that same time frame. This court's previous precedent...
What did the text messages reveal?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, the text messages are between two adults talking about their mutual foot fetish.
They were, yeah. Yes.
Okay, what's that say about the kid?
Yes, Your Honor,
we can posit that if sucking on an adult female's feet were an offense under the code, then maybe you'd have something here. But this is two adults exchanging information about their sexual proclivities. So where does that leave us with respect to the kid?
Yes, Your Honor, while the text message exchanges themselves and the conversations that the appellant had with his mistress were between two consenting adults, those text messages specifically reference not only the appellant's fascination with feet, not only with his fascination with children's feet, but with his sexual interests and desires related to the 8-year-old child's feet in particular. In particular, the appellant talks about how he wants his mistress to lick this child's feet and suck on his and also rub his feet. They also show, and through the testimony of the mistress, that the appellant...
Well, it's one thing to say, boy, I'd like to suck her feet because I'm turned on by it. It's another thing to say, why don't you go suck her feet?
Your Honor, and there'd certainly be, if the text messages indicated that the appellant wanted to specifically suck on BG's feet, that would be direct evidence of his intent. Here the text messages show circumstantially that the appellant had a sexual interest and desire related to BG's feet.
Well, say he had a sexual interest and desire that was satisfied by watching a third party suck the child's feet. Is that an offense under 120B?
Your Honor, that would show that the appellant had a sexual interest and desire.
Well, but it's an interest in watching the woman do it, not an interest in doing it himself.
Yes, Your
Honor. Is that an offense?
Your Honor, at this stage, in viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the government and in drawing all reasonable inferences in favor of the government, that evidence, coupled with the other evidence in the record, would be sufficient in order to show that the appellant had the intent. And the appellant not only talked about what he was interested in his mistress doing with his wife, but he specifically referenced in a very highly sexually charged context that he could probably stick someone else's foot in his mouth the way that he does with the child's feet, referencing back in time to things that he had done with the child's feet. Additionally, the testimony of the appellant's mistress put those text messages in context, and when viewed in the light most favorable to the government, also show the appellant's intent to arouse or gratify sexual desires when he kissed the child's feet. Specifically, the mistress testified that these text message exchanges, particularly about the child's feet, were used as a form of sexual foreplay between her and appellant, that he sent pictures of the child's feet when engaging.
Well, now wait a minute. Which way does that cut? You're saying it's a form of sexual foreplay between him and her, the child, not him and the child. It's a form of sexual foreplay between him and his mistress.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so which way does that cut?
Your Honor,
we back in the situation that I just posited?
Where
he's saying, boy, do I get turned on by thinking of you sucking the kid's feet, or something like that. And I have trouble, one, even thinking that's an offense, and two, thinking that it's any sort of legally sufficient evidence. But go on.
Yes, Your Honor. The reasonable inference...
Get me out of this hole.
Yes, Your Honor, the reasonable inference to be drawn from the fact that these text message exchanges and the exchange of pictures were used as a term of foreplay is that he was exhibiting his gratification and sexual arousal related to acts between a mouth and the child's feet. That evidence and the evidence in the whole record when viewed in the light most favorable to the government, the reasonable inference to be drawn from that.
You guys are sure stretching the light most favorable to the government. It seems to me that what he's talking about is his paramour. But go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. And specifically related to the reasonableness of these inferences and also the timing of them. Again, these kisses of the feet occurred within a 5-month time frame from December 2014 to April 2015. And that was partially based on the mistress's testimony of when she would actually physically go to appellant's house and when she would observe this behavior between the appellant and the child. We also know through her testimony that she spent more time at the house as their relationship progressed and when she was actually in a relationship with appellant, which the text message exchanges show by that point that they were in this relationship. So again, when viewed in the light most favorable to the government, these text messages were and sexual conversations could reasonably shown to have occurred close in time to when the kisses occurred. Additionally, Your Honor, even a plain reading of Orban and a common sense understanding of how circumstantial evidence can be used in cases further supports that there was legally sufficient evidence in this case. While the government asserts that Orban shouldn't apply, even if the court finds that Orban is persuasive, the government asserts that Orban was merely restating the fact that the requisite intent must coincide with the criminal act. And it was actually, instead of limiting the scope of how Article 134 could be used, was really showing just how expansive that offense could be if the requisite intent was shown to be established. And finally, Your Honor, in terms of the legal sufficiency of the evidence in this case, we had a military judge who made special findings. Those special findings were not fanciful. They were based in terms of the record. And this court, in viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the government and drawing all reasonable inferences in favor of the government, should find that the appellant had the requisite intent under Article 120B in order to show that the evidence was legally sufficient in this case. And pending any further questions, the government concludes its argument.
Thank you, counsel. The appellant have rebuttal.
The government is asking this court to make an inference that goes too far. It's an inference that goes beyond that supported by any reported case that counsel's been able to identify. And it's clearly demonstrated by referencing the facts in Orban itself. In United States v. Orban, the accused was charged with indecent liberties for showing magazines which contain nudity but weren't necessarily pornographic or pure in nature. And the accused challenged the legal sufficiency of that. And in upholding the evidence as legally sufficient, this court looked to his accompanying behavior and language. That is, he touched the thigh of the boy as he was showing this potentially innocent or at least non-purient magazine. And if you look at those facts, you can almost flip the elements and say there's a physical contact and the other is showing the manifestation of intent that there's nudity there. And the two go side by side. And that simply can't be done here. You can't infer anything other than typical household parenting intent from the description of the acts charged.
To be clear, so is your point that it's not enough that there's evidence that he has a foot fetish and that he talked about his daughter's feet in the context of a foot fetish, that that's not enough?
No, Your Honor.
Well, then what is your point? Because I've heard about enough about sucking on feet.
Yes, Your Honor. My point is that it must be manifest in his actions that he's motivated by the intent to arouse or gratify himself at the time he does the act.
But do you agree that this manifestation of an intent can occur later on as long as it's referencing back to the time of the actual alleged acts?
Yes,
you agree
Your Honor.
With that? So your point here is that there's not enough to connect the manifestations of these intent or alleged intent to the acts. Is that,
yes,
is that your point?
The inference, it's just an unreasonable inference. It goes beyond the facts that are out there in the text message.
Now, you're making the point about it being unreasonable. Now, we have a trial judge, three CCA judges. I mean, the standard is any reasonable trier of fact, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so they're either, you're alleging they're all unreasonable? I mean, that's okay. You can say that.
I see I'm out of time.
Please answer. Please answer the question.
I'll save you from those judges down at the CCA, and I need not get a response to that question.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Court thanks counsel for both sides, and the case is now submitted. Court is in recess pending further order of the court.